Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. I'm amped tonight, folks. I'm real amped. I wasn't here last week, and I'm here to talk NXT this week. And Tom wasn't here last week either. How did it go? I don't know. I meant to find out, and then I accidentally forgot. But I'm sure it was wonderful. And we're glad that you came back this week after whatever happened last week. But I guess Nate will have to tell us all about that. So we'll go to the main event. We talk main event first on this show for May 4th, 2021. Are the May the 4th jokes played out? I think they kind of are. I think we're in a post-May the 4th be with you world. But I guess you'll have to tell me, folks. Because I don't know how long I'm supposed to hang on to these Star Wars memes as a guy who's not really even into Star Wars. But why? Why are we talking about this? Let's talk wrestling. Let's talk NXT, Shotzi Blackheart and Ember Moon defending the Women's Tag Team Championships against Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell of The Way. This is one of three matches this week that went over 14 minutes. Sometimes we don't get any. This week we got three. I weirdly thought we didn't get a lot of wrestling minutes this week because it seemed like there was so much. It seemed like we got a lot outside the ring, and we did. They were efficient with the storytelling they did outside the ring, and yet still got a lot inside the ring, which is impressive. Some of it hit, some of it didn't. For me, this match did not. I thought that I was going to love this. Candice and Indy win the tag team championships. I had a really strong feeling that they were going to do so. They are an actual team. It makes sense for them to do it. And it seems like Shotzi and Ember were just there as single stars to legitimize the tag team championships. Hopefully we're going to get our first championship reign of any length here because we've not had one yet. Three champions already. We had a stunning 55 minutes and 55 seconds of in-ring time on this show. So make a wish if you are, if you're superstitious. That's what we had. This match. Okay. So no holds barred match like this seemingly is something that you put together to put over the faces when the heels have done everything they can to win all these matches under regular rules because they keep breaking the rules. And I know there are a few different schools of thought, a few different ways to look at this, but it seems like if the heels, the Way's whole act is that they're chicken shit and they cheat all the time. And that should have been the way that they won the tag team championships. It's just, it doesn't make any sense to me that they won in this street fight context. And also I had some real issues with spots that normally take people entirely out of matches being no-sold by Shotzi and I can't remember if it was Indy or Candice. I think it was Candice. Relatively quickly, Candice did a decent job of selling. Shotzi just no-sold whatever they did outside the ring. I don't know. It was, as a story, this is fine. As the Way winning championships on May the 4th, I get it. I understand why they did what they did. But I didn't love the flow, and I'm very interested. And I liked this show tonight primarily, so I'm quite interested to see how the feelings are on this main event altogether. Because I love the work of Candice, and I very much like the work of Shotzi, Ember, and Indy in the ring as well. So I didn't want to not like this match, but alas, I am stranded there. Tom, who are you, and what did you think of the main event?
At Tom Stoup on Twitter. Is that why you said, and also with you, when I hopped on the call earlier?
No, that's a stupid thing I do a lot because I went to church a lot as a youth because you gotta, if people are taking you there. Right.
Haven't said it in a while. Listen to 8 years back on VIP. Go VIP if you're not already. Our most recent episode is talking about Chris Jericho versus Bray Wyatt. All of these episodes are really fun to do, and we have some fun movie discussions after the fact, after we talk about the wrestling. The wrestling burnout was real, so I really appreciate Nate stepping up to the plate last week, as he does often, and I especially appreciate the doctors coming in and picking up the slack. And Nate, I didn't know that you were also feeling not your best last week until I listened back to the episode, so I hope you are feeling better, and I do hope that if Corbin barks while you are unmuted tonight, he does not get in trouble because he's too cute and too new to get upset with yet. And if I must, I guess I'll talk about the match. This was a garbage match, and there were some okay moments between Candace and Ember, but it was pretty much just spot festy and garbage-y. The fact that there are – it's one of those things where, like, just looking at tonight, yeah, I also am fine with, you know, even in favor of the way getting the tag championships here. And I think that this opens up new storyline potential for the female portion of the way and the quartet, moving forward here. And I particularly hope that Ember and Shotzi can now split off from one another, since they have magnified, you know, what makes them aggravating. Ember wasn't even annoying before pairing with Shotzi, so hopefully she can split off from that. But just the fact that there are already, it feels like these championships have been around for a month and a half, and there are already six champions in a very small division, so that's not great. But
I want to watch and see how long it takes for there to have been more women who've held the tag team championship than the singles championship. Because we're at almost six women for the tag team championship, and it's like, what, 12 to 15 for the singles? It might not take long.
I was thinking of reigns rather than individuals. So, yeah, it's or maybe very, very close to it. But yeah, and I think that the other note here is just in the hopes that Shotzi does indeed split off here. It seems like after Taya Valkyrie was sort of meddling, you know, peripheral to the tag scene tonight, and then later on, probably poop, but some kind of unseen biological substance came out of her Pomeranian into Shotzi's tank. It seems like Shotzi is being set up as Taya's debut match, because I'm sure Shotzi will blame the title loss on being off her game because of the poop.
Yeah, what a show. We got a bunch of dog shit, and then we also got actual dog shit in a tank. So there you go. It was, I don't know. Nate, thank you very much for giving us the break last week. It was, again, as Tom said, it literally just was burnout. I've taken some weeks off for things that I had to take off in life or whatever. But I needed a week off for podcast and NXT burnout, and it was much appreciated. So Nate, I'll tell you what, 5-minute moratorium on making jokes at your expense. You're welcome.
Ooh, all right.
I know.
Wow.
Most I've ever.
A guy can only ask for one for so much, you know.
Right. Do you want to email us? Do that thing. PWTorch NXT@gmail.com. Do you want to email us? That's what I said. Do you want to call us? 515-605-9345. You can do either of those things. A few of you have called us. We got three calls in the queue, and we will go to you after we have finished main event talk, and we will go to the three emails, well, three last I checked, after that as well. But Nate, who are you, and do you have thoughts on this main event?
Oh, I've always got thoughts on things. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg, and I do the hits and misses for NXT and the All Perspective SmackDown Report, no problem for stepping in last week, guys. I wasn't feeling my best, but I was feeling good enough to do a show, and it actually made me feel a little bit better, I think, kind of doing some normalcy and things like that. But I am less concussed this week, and feeling better. So, and Corbin, speaking of dog shit, there's no dog shit. So thank you, Corbin. I appreciate it, buddy. Anyway, main event. I'm pretty much right there with you guys. I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add that you guys didn't already. I had a lot higher hopes for this match than what actually transpired. You know, like Kelly, like you're saying, you know, all four of these women, they're all four women that I really like. I like their bodies of work. Something in this match just did not click for me. I don't know. I think it was definitely a combination of some of just this no selling. You know, I mean, these moves, you know, Shotzi going through a ladder, Shotzi going off, you know, going through a table, this, that, the other thing, and people just getting right back up. And it seemed like high spots for the sake of high spots and not a cohesive storytelling match. So if you're looking for like just pure action for the sake of pure action, then yeah, sure, then this probably was for you, but I don't think this is really up either any of our alley. You know, it's certainly not up mine. Yeah, I appreciate what they did, and I'm really happy that here we are. We're actually at a point where women's wrestling is main eventing, and they're in these spots to do these gimmick matches where they never would have done them, you know, in the past. So I'm really happy that we're there. I just wish that it was executed a little bit differently. And unfortunately, I hate saying that, but got to call it like I see it.
Indeed. I don't know what else to say. I'm sure we are headed for a good title reign. I think that a group like The Way holding championships and multiple championships is really what you need to do with them, and it should produce some good stuff. And they're already using Austin Theory for comedy, and now he can be the lonely bastard who has no gold, and I think they will find some stuff to do with that as well. I like the development, but the match was whatever. Better luck next time. I don't know. So let's go to the phone lines. If you are at area code 410, you were in first, so I'm going to go to you first. So tell me who you are and where you're calling from.
It's Reverend Keith in Baltimore. How are you guys?
I'm doing great, Reverend Keith. Good to hear your voice after a couple of weeks. And I liked the rest of the show, so I don't want to seem overly negative. But hopefully you have some positive stuff to say about the rest of the show, too.
Yes, I just want to lay out some bullet points, and then I'm going to step aside and let the three of you discuss them. Aside from the main event, which I felt that what the outcome was earlier in the show when Casey and Caden had so much vested interest in it. You know, they are a babyface tag team that's trying to climb the ladder, albeit somewhat unsuccessful over the past few months. So I think that kind of tipped the hand as to who was going to win. I guess it gives The Way some sort of credibility, but I want to talk about the top of the show. I was impressed with the way NXT laid out the show from the first segment onward with the street fight. The match between Swerve and Russ. I'm starting to notice that NXT is starting to build more factions. You notice how they had former NFL football player AJ Francis, who is on WWE's Most Wanted Treasures. He's been shown on there numerous times, and he's new to the Performance Center. He's in this faction now with Shanti the Adonis, Brianna Brandy, and Swerve. And I think that will elevate Swerve up the card. Okay, next I want to talk about the debut for Asher Hale, otherwise known as Anthony Henry. I followed Anthony Henry in Evolve. He had great matches against the likes of Darby Allin, J.D. Drake, and others. He's a former Evolve Tag Team Champion and FIP Heavyweight Champion. So I think he's going to bring some exciting matches to the NXT brand. And I just like how they laid the foundation for the future on this episode, as well as, you know, continued the Karrion Kross title picture with Balor, Dunn, and O'Reilly. But it also looks like they may be moving Cross more toward the babyface role because, by him going at it with Theory and Gargano, eventually the fans are going to start cheering for him. So I want to step aside and let you guys, discuss some of these points. And thank you so much for taking my call. I'm glad that the two of you was able to get a much-needed break last week. I'm sure you were burnt out and you needed a break. But you guys do a wonderful job. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, Reverend Keith, for the call and for the effusive praise. I'm always down for that. Yes, and for some of these bullet points, salient points, indeed. How do we break this down? Let's go to the main event scene first. Yes, so we had Karrion Kross, Kyle O'Reilly, Pete Dunne, Finn Balor in that order. They do these main event player dumps on a pretty regular basis. And they're always done, not always, but they're often done in the same way. Somebody comes out, they start talking. Someone interrupts them. Four guys start fighting. It conveniently works out to two pairs of guys fighting against each other. And that's the way it goes. So, yeah, good stuff there to – it's not – I hesitate to see either good or bad because it's predictable fare, but these segments typically work on me. We also had an email that I should go to once I figure out where I set my phone about Kyle. And before I find my phone, I'll just say the email says something about should the announcers be calling him Cool Kyle or will this have the Michael Cole effect? And a detrimental effect on having him call them cool. And I would say, I would argue not totally. I mean, if it was just Vic doing it, that would be one thing because Vic is very lame, just like Michael Cole is, like super lame. But Beth kind of has a cool factor and Wade's got a huge cool factor. So I think they can get away with it if they were to say it. But yes, I think they need to tread carefully in telling us somebody's cool. Show us he's cool and we'll believe you. Tell us and we'll say, no, we have to see it. So on that main event picture, and I will just say about Karrion Kross that there's a lot to unpack on whether this guy is a face or a heel. He got booed tonight when he came out, which made sense until he was attacked by the Way, who are the most clear, very clearly on the heel side of the ledger guys. They're the ones who attack Karrion Kross. It should be cathartic and funny to see somebody like Austin Theory, who is such a little rat, get beat up by Karrion Kross. I know that's the deal. Maybe it's meant to turn him face. I'm not sure. But with Karrion Kross, we're never sure because one week to another, we don't know. Like with Balor, it seems like he's a tweener. With Kross, it seems like there's a strong attack, but that strong attack changes from week to week, Tom.
Or from beginning of segment to end of segment here. Very much appreciate Keith's kind words, and I agree regarding Swerve's faction. I think this means an elevation is in store for him, and I'll touch on that a little bit more when we dig into it. Regarding this, it was pretty typical. Just throwing everybody out there, with the exception of Adam Cole, who we already know is involved in this picture. My major issue, well, regarding the segments that led up to the Way's involvement here, I quote Leonard Maltin when the entirety of my review is just no, just the word no. But I'm actually really super down on what they did with, actually having Gargano get the upper hand on Kross and laying him out like that. I mean, the segment ended with him laying there in the middle of the ring, like he was dead, as if he was Brock Lesnar selling for Drew McIntyre at the end of WrestleMania 36. It's the most prone I think we've ever seen Karrion Kross, at least to my memory. And even if this is all leading to a near future Gargano cross plan that they might have program that they might have planned, I don't know why you waste that visual on this. Save that up and use it for something more important than this. So big thumbs down on that.
Nathan.
I'm okay with what happened, I guess. We see this, like you said, we see this all the time where you just kind of parade everybody to the ring that's kind of in the title picture. And I'm a little bit over that, I guess. But at the same time, WWE probably never stopped doing that. So I guess I should probably get used to it. That's probably my biggest complaint, my biggest nitpick here. I'm kind of okay with everything that's going on with everybody involved, really. Karrion Kross, I do agree, kind of his position right now is a little strange. Because I feel like he should be a heel. I think that's kind of where that gimmick, the natural direction of that gimmick lies, is as a heel, or at least some sort of an anti-hero. And you come out in Paisley. Maybe it's just me. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't a nice vest. I liked the vest. I dug the vest, but not for the character. Is there something about it really, it made me think dweeb more than badass. And I don't know, maybe I just have no fashion sense in 2021, which is probably actually very accurate, but, I don't know. I feel like he should be out there in, like, I don't say like a leather jacket and, you know, whatever, but like just something a little bit more intimidating than like a pinkish purple Paisley vest. And I feel like that kind of plays into what we're talking about with where is his character going? Is he a good, face? Is he a heel? And the attire right now kind of plays into that ambiguity, and I'm not really sure where to feel about it. Other than that, I'm okay with the Pete Dunne. I'm happy to see him involved in this. Kyle O'Reilly, I guess if we're going weird fashion choices, we could talk about him too. I'm not sure how I'm feeling about this, like, Kyle O'Reilly, Orange Cassidy mashup thing he's doing here. I'm going to give it a few more weeks, but I kind of feel like it almost, where they're calling him like cool guy Kyle, I guess going to the, going what we were just talking about, like, cool guy Kyle, that just doesn't seem like a quote cool thing to say, and it feels like it does diminish him down a little bit, even if it is Wade saying it. I think Wade might be the only one that could kind of sort of get away with it and be like, okay, but even so, cool guy Kyle, hey, it's cool guy Kyle, cool guy Kyle. I don't know. I mean, if somebody was to call me cool guy Nate, like, I'd look at them like, yeah, okay. I don't know. I don't like it. I really don't. So, yeah, I don't know. I've got a lot of things that I do like about this, the main event angle, but I got a lot of things too. Like I said, I'm a little bit up in the air on.
Cool Kyle is the thing I forgot to mention. Kyle's been calling himself that for a long time, so I want to give it a pass. But the way that they're really trying to signal, like, hey, this is what we want you to chant, this is what we want to put on T-shirts or
yeah,
whatever, it definitely plays into JB's email, I think it was, plays into what he's suggesting. So I think it's the kind of thing that, if Kyle continued putting it on his Instagram stories and fans picked up on it organically, fine. But
yes.
But otherwise, yeah, you don't need Vic Joseph telling us, like, hey, this is what we want you to call him.
The big dog.
Exactly.
So I don't think we're in super danger of you being called cool guy Nate,
oh,
but
never,
but
never.
I mean, it could happen,
doubtful.
Yeah.
Doubtful.
If the people would like what I tell them to like is what Vince McMahon and Homer Simpson say. So, so there you go. We will talk Leon Ruff and Swerve Scott and Asher Hill and Cameron Grimes a little bit later. But yeah, it was an interesting step forward, and I look forward. I'm very intrigued, Nate, by the fact that you said Orange Cassidy, because I thought it when I first saw him step out. I thought it, like, not even trying. He just stepped out, and I was like, Orange, it's Finn Balor. Not Finn Balor, Kyle O'Reilly.
I've been saying it for a few weeks.
And I so rarely listen though. But,
yeah, fair enough.
It's back. We're back. All three of us are back.
All three are back for the first time in like a month.
No, this was the first time though, Nate, that he came out, and regardless of everything that's been said, I thought it immediately. And I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know that I was seeing it before, but it was the first thing I saw this time. I don't know that he's trying to emulate him. I think that he's probably not. I hope that he's probably not. He seems like a creative guy, but I don't know for sure. So
I don't think he's emulating him, or at least trying to. I just think it's a very interesting comparison. I think that's probably just his natural style, but.
Yeah, well, everything's derivative, and Tom and I have talked a little about that in Talking Movies on NXT 8YB. It's not possible to make something that you're seeing for the first time for the most part. So, okay, let's go to another call, and we will get to more of this show. I've still got to find my phone. I think I left it upstairs, but in the meantime. Let's go to 615. So 615, if you can hear me, go ahead and tell me who you are and where you're calling from.
What is up, you lovely people? This is Sean, VFP from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Good to talk to you. How y'all doing tonight?
Sean, I'm not lovely, and you know it. But thank you. Thank you for saying so. And it's good to hear from you as well. What'd you think?
Yeah, the more you guys are talking about it, the more I'm thinking about it, the more I didn't really love it as much as I thought. I mean, I liked the show, too. The first match was good, but I'll let you guys talk about that in a little bit. But the one match I was going to talk to you most about was the Thatcher Ciampa Grizzled Young Veterans match. Very, very good match. Very well wrestled, I thought. Loved all four guys a lot from what I've seen. I mean, I love Ciampa and Thatcher. But I'm liking them as a tag team. What did you guys think of them hitting them with a shoe behind the ref's back to win? I wasn't a fan. I like them, and so I was like, oh, it's kind of sneaky, you know, and you feel like, oh, it's kind of cool from that aspect of, like, you know, I just don't like, again, if they're baby faces, which I'm assuming they are, you know, why do they need to cheat to win? I don't really care for that. Both those guys are so good at what they do. I think they can beat the Grizzly Young Veterans by themselves without any behind-the-ref activity. But I thought the match was really good. And I want to say, Nate, you did a great job last week, so if you're feeling bad about it, don't, because you did a great job. And, guys, I'm glad you're all back, the three of you, and thanks for taking my call, as always.
Well, hey, thanks.
Thank you very much, Sean. So on the finish of this match, this was one of these – so WWE is huge now, a lot of channels, and WWE sometimes makes – the mistake of assuming that you are hip to every single thing that's going on TV. And if you were a very regular viewer of NXT UK, then the cuteness of this finish would make 1,000 times more sense. Now, they tried to kind of explain this by setting it up last week, but here's the thing. So in NXT UK, in England, fans are bonkers, and I love them. I love them for it. I love UK wrestling fans and soccer fans. They're crazy. They make up chants that are ridiculous, and they're cheeky, and they're fun, and I love them. And they say, if you hate Gibson, shoes off. And everybody in the audience holds up one of their shoes because they hate Zach Gibson. Like, they're all in on it, and then Gibson sells it like it's the worst thing in the world, that they're all holding up their shoe because they hate Zach Gibson. So last week, they had one of the faces talk about, if you hate Gibson, shoes off. So this week, the match happens, And then Wade Barrett says in the middle of the scrum, I just lost my shoe in the fight or whatever. And I'm like, oh my God, now I know why they brought it up, because I have seen every episode of NXT UK and I knew where this was headed. But for you, the fan who maybe hasn't, and maybe even for some who have, they're not thinking about the fact that the reason this finish worked as a joke is because if you hate Gibson, shoes off, because the shoe came off, Gibson was hit with it, and then Ciampa was holding it up at the end because he hates Gibson. This can only work in pro wrestling, because this makes no sense outside of a pro wrestling context, but that's what it was. As for the match itself, 14-23, Thatcher pins Gibson in this match. I thought it was fun, if forgettable, very much an NXT schmoz, not quite a tornado match, but kind of a tornado match with the mid-show main event. And Thatcher goes over, which I thought was kind of refreshing. Nate?
I really dug this match. You know, Thatcher Ciampa are their in-ring style is so close to Grizzly Young Vets. You knew this was going to be a great match anyway. Just, you know, their styles are so similar. Like, you knew they were going to have just an awesome match. So I was totally down with it, except for I didn't like the finish for some of the reasons that Sean brought up. It's like, they're these badasses. They should be winning by, they should be winning by, you know, stretching the opponents or, you know, actually out wrestling them. Right. But simply for the shoes off, if you hate Gibson thing, I am giving it a pass, because to me, it's more like head games. It's mind games. You know, with Grizzly Young Vets, it's getting under the skin of Gibson and Drake. And I really like, I love it. You know, like you said, they brought that chant up last week. They brought it up again tonight. You know, even up on commentary, they brought it up a couple times on commentary. Even, you know, Beth Phoenix afterwards calling Wade out, saying, you know, he had his shoes off, and Wade's, I had no such thing. You know, even though earlier he said his shoes came off. So yeah, like, totally dug that. Really like the fact that they're kind of, they are bringing that shoes off for Gibson thing back. Like I said, only in pro wrestling where that could actually work and be a thing. And it does. It works. It's great. The UK fans are phenomenal. Love them. Anytime that anytime WWE has an event over there, just, I love listening to the chants. I may not understand half of them. You know, whether I actually can understand them, like figure out what they're saying, or, you know, once I do figure out what they're saying, I have no idea why they're saying what they're saying, but still the enthusiasm and all of that can totally get behind, especially when you want to take shoes off if you hate Gibson.
Yeah. So for all those reasons, it worked for me, but I have my doubts that even with what they were able to put out there, they made it make sense, because it's a weird high concept thing. And I think that you almost have to do a full segment to set this up about Zach Gibson for it to work on the average fan. And I would love to ask more opinions of folks who have not seen NXT UK at all, because I would think that this made very little sense, because superficially it is just babyfaces cheating to win. Tom?
Ultimately, I do give this a pass for the exact same reasons that you guys are laying out with the shoes off thing, and just the fact that they started off great, but Ciampa and Thatcher have continued to even grow into a better team than where they started at. So they can get away with a lot, I think.
Matching jackets. Matching jackets. I meant to bring up the matching jackets.
You know what? Yes, I did. I don't know how long that's been going on, but I did notice the matching gear tonight. But I do share Sean's uncertainty with it, even with the idea that it goes along with the joke, and just the awkwardness of afterwards with Wade trying to sell what he's supposed to sell about it by, oh, that was my shoe. And then Vic Joseph says, I don't care about the shoe. What an ending. What a win. And it's like, well, the shoe was the win. Okay, Vic. But I think my biggest problem with it, okay, well, positives first. What I will remember about this, apart from any nitpicks, is that it was a borderline pay-per-view quality event, you know, a match. You don't want that all the time. I am a proponent for not trying to aim for pay-per-view quality on TV. So this came right up to the line and didn't cross it. And that's, I was very impressed with the work that the guys all did together. But the problem I think I have with it is very similar to the Cool Kyle problem, is that they are artificially trying to get the American audience to do this shoes off thing, and interact more with, Grizzled Young Vets act. And the funny thing about it is that they're trying to, this is something that came through the fans, I think. I don't know if it originated with a promo where they were really trying to signal it, or, you know, whatever. I don't know what the exact origins were, but you would think that if they wanted to artificially generate that, they would send Josiah Williams out there during a commercial to talk about it and sort of encourage, without telling them this is what we want you to do, encourage the people that are there to do it. Like, oh yeah, we know what we do when we see Zach Gibson, and then, you know, the fans that are there will know, and then they'll probably think, oh, well, maybe I'll do that during the match. So then you don't need Ciampa to go out there and talk about it a week in advance. It's already set up because the fans are already doing it during the matches. So it's just a weird way, a weird Cool Kyle way of going about it. But ultimately, yeah, very, very good match. Wouldn't even argue if they ran it back because of the shoe spot.
All right, folks, so there you go. I 100% left my phone upstairs, so I'm going to have to run up there while I throw to you guys. So before we take our last call, let's go to the opener. Leon Ruff versus Isaiah Swerve Scott. This has been a feud match for a few weeks. And also, one of the things that that we were talking about was it just seems like we're getting a little more sizzle on these weekly matches. And one of the things I've really liked about these last few shows is that we are not on the inexorable march toward TakeOver. We're making a good TV show week after week, and we're making smaller matches seem like a big deal in the moment for each week, which is what they need to be. And I thought they did a really good job of that with the opening of this show. I thought they did a good job of that with bringing up things later in the show, like Saray and Zeta Ramir, just simple stuff for simple matches, and promoting their talent as must see. I think they're taking more time that they decided not to take when they were head to head with AEW. 'Cause if you're not doing a tope, then you're not doing nothing. But thankfully we're getting a little more time on that sizzle. So we opened the show with that, and we started with Leon Ruff versus Isaiah Swerve Scott. What's so interesting to me is this is a match between guys who are essentially slightly lower mid-carders, given that NXT has got such a strong mid-card and everything. And that's kind of where these guys have been, both taking a lot of pins. But this feud has gotten real TV time. They've both done, like Isaiah's, Ruff has done some promos that are full of fire. Swerve has done really, really good heel promos with the hip hop backbeat, percussive beat, while he's hanging out with his entourage in the background. Not really entourage, not saying anything. They're just there. We know they're there. I kind of wish we'd had names on them before this, or at least had names on them on NXT TV before this. But anyway, opening match, Falls Count Anywhere. By the way, of all the very samey match stipulations, by far my favorite is Falls Count Anywhere. I don't know why, but I just think it's amazing that somebody can be pinned anywhere but in the ring, even though most of them end up in the ring because that's the best thing for the live crowd. This one was no different. In 15 minutes and 19 seconds, Swerve beats Leon Ruff. Ruff has Swerve beat, but AJ Francis, the big heavy, the diesel to Swerve's Sean, catches him on the outside, slams him, tosses him in for Swerve's finisher, and Swerve gets the Duke. over Leon Ruff. And as stated, we are we're seemingly headed for a faction of three women and one female. That is not what I meant to say. Three men and a woman and a woman. So yes, putting together factions and with interesting breakdowns. So I don't know what the height of this faction is. I don't know if it's just become a thing that that these guys in AEW think that factions are the way to go, but I like that they're trying this and interesting to see where it goes. This was my favorite match of the night, kind of by a lot. And yeah, I would love to hear what you guys say, but I got to find my phone, so I'll only hear some of it. Nate?
Oh, God, I was sitting here just going, please don't cut to me, because I could not stop laughing about three women and a female. So, anyway, I think this was probably my favorite match of the night. Actually, this definitely was my favorite match of the night as well. I'm really digging what Swerve is doing right now. I feel like he's finally settling into a character that he's comfortable in. Probably over the last few months, he's really got there. But like tonight, I felt like he was cold, he was calloused, he was calculated, he was mean. He came across that way, especially to me tonight. I really dug it. Leon Ruff as well. Like, he had a lot of fire behind him, a lot of passion. Clearly, you know, he just kind of got his butt kicked for the most part throughout this match, as I feel like he probably should have, considering his, you know, his size and his place on the card and all of that. I like the fact that, you know, he almost had the win. He almost had that win at the very end there. And then obviously Swerve, you know, uses his entourage to his benefit. It was a phenomenal match. The fact that these guys are undercard wrestlers, they're mid-card wrestlers, they are actually given a stipulation match and TV time and time to grow and develop and tell a story is great. NXT is not known for, they're not known for gimmick matches really, period. It more so in recent times, yes, but you know, it's not super, super, super often in NXT where there's a gimmick match, like a no holds barred or Falls Count Anywhere or Street Fight. I know we got two of them tonight, but you know, and usually when there is one of those gimmick matches, it's given towards somebody that's got a higher spot on the card. So the fact that there was this Falls Count Anywhere match that was given to these two guys, the time that was given to this feud, not just tonight, but the past handful of weeks now, it's been great. And I think it's been a great thing for Swerve. It's been a great thing for Ruff. It's been a great thing for NXT overall. Swerve, in this particular iteration of this character, he's killing it as a mid-card heel, and give it a little bit more time to kind of develop that heel and develop that character. And I can see him toying, you know, with the North American title. I could see him toying in the main event scene. Maybe not necessarily winning the NXT title or anything like that, but I could see him being a really good, cold, calculated, not necessarily a Roman Reigns-esque type of a heel, but almost in a way, because I feel like there was a lot of similarities the ways that he's presenting himself in the way that the tribal chief Roman Reigns is presenting himself. A few similarities anyway. But I could totally see him being like a super cold, calculated heel if given the right booking. And I feel like he could certainly pull it off given his history on the indies and just how well he does in the ring and on the mic. So thumbs up big time for me for this match.
I am indeed back. I did find my phone, so that's good. I thought that Ruff, who's been doing a good job of spots in general, is also kind of coming along pretty far in terms of trying to chain things together, and that's giving his credibility a needed boost. And they're figuring out the right way to work with him, which is, yes, indeed, to have the heel primarily dominate, but for him to have to not only be plucky and, you know, be able to kick out of certain things and have a never say die attitude, but also to continue to have to innovate new ideas on the fly when somebody like Swerve, who knows his shtick, is able to thwart his usual offense. And I thought that this match did a pretty good job of that, and they laid this out really, really well, Tom.
So the question on last week's podcast was, are we really putting Leon Ruff in gimmick matches? Why would we do that? And my thought was, well, it's so scrawny little Leon Ruff's offense can look more believable. We can get some heat on him with Swerve legally using foreign objects outside of the ring, and then Ruff would seem that much more justified utilizing the weapons himself, or throwing Swerve into lockers like he did in that backstage segment, but this time it's in the context of a match. And so I was surprised that the only backstage stuff and real, you know, significant weapons stuff happened in the split screen commercial, which is always just a heel heat segment. So it was just Swerve ramming Ruff up against stuff backstage before they came back out in front of the crowd. Which, I mean, you know, they still have the outside area, which is where the match ended. So they could have used that anyway. So I don't think that having the action in front of the crowd, I think, was the issue here. But
if you'll indulge me for just a sec, I was wondering if that was a litmus test to see what people, if they can hold a larger number of viewers during the commercial, because they promoted a false count anywhere match where anything can happen anywhere in the arena. And then they did all the crazy crap during the commercial, which I certainly took note of as well. Like I tune out during the commercial, I leave the channel on, but I'm not paying a lot of attention. I look up and they're by the lockers. I'm like, this is historically where all the crazy stuff is happening for the last couple of months. And I'm just wondering, are they trying this out to see if this kind of gimmick holds the interest a little bit better? If you know that, yeah, you can't finish a match during the split screen, fans will be pissed off. But what if you do important spots during that?
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Every time we talk about that, I remember that one time that some Rusev match accidentally ended during the commercial. And I can't remember what the heck it was, but I do not think it was supposed to happen.
No, I remember that. That was on Rusev Day. Yeah. So.
Okay. Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, that's when
how quickly
happened.
I forget.
I can't believe you forgot that.
Yeah, I sure did. I was into it too. I liked what Alexander was doing. So like I said earlier, I agree that the having a faction for Swerve now seems like it's a good sign for at least short-term plans for him. You're right that they've never named Brianna Brandy on screen, even though this is the third specific time I can remember her appearing. There were two other times that I believe were both Cameron Grimes segments, but I could be incorrect there. She was definitely in the zombie match, and she appeared at least one other time. And then she was on Raw Underground once. She was probably on Raw Underground, like in the crowd for most, if not all, of the matches. But there was that one episode where Shane called her Brianna and had her host Raw Underground for a little bit, but then she never came back again. So I don't know. I don't know if she's a triple threat, but she's definitely multi-talented. So they've had their eye on her for different things. Hopefully this is the one that sticks. But then the guy in the back, Keith, mentioned that it was Ashanti. But I didn't, every single time without fail, every single time that guy is on TV, I don't recognize him because he's constantly changing his look, which would be okay if you told us that it was him first. And his thing was that he was always radically changing his look and always trying out different things. That actually might be kind of an appealing character trait for the relatively flamboyant character he's portraying, or at least was portraying. But I had to go to Swerve socials to see if he maybe posted something about it, because yet again, Ashanti the Adonis was on screen, and I did not recognize him. But that realizing it was him made me feel that much more optimistic about whatever this is going to be because every time we've seen Ashanti the Adonis, he's turned our heads. And then AJ Francis, I've been tuned out of the NFL long enough that I have no idea whether or not he was a big deal. Omari Palmer's been in the PC for a while, and you know, AJ Francis gets signed and immediately leapfrogs him. He's already on another WWE TV show. He's already debuting on TV. So they must like this guy. But I just think that's funny that we've got so many people that have just been lingering in the PC for what feels like so long. And this AJ Francis guy gets signed and they're like, yep, there's the TV camera.
So Brianna Brandy, hopefully they're keeping her unnamed to give her a new name. I'm not saying Brianna Brandy has to be a porn name, but come on, it is. So two first names, alliterative, they can do better than Brianna.
And if anybody knows anything about porn names.
Oh, it's the guy with a porn name, indeed. Yeah, don't ever Google Kelly Wells.
I've known you long enough that it's no longer the first thing I think about every time I hear your name.
Well, there you go. Yeah, we're good. We're homies.
Which suggests that there was a time where I knew enough about the other one that, well, yeah. Anyway.
We're so close that Tom stopped thinking about porn when he thought of me. I'm touched. I'm frankly touched. With that, why don't we go to Darrell and see what Darrell thought. Darrell, if you're there, go ahead and say hey.
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing all right. In a bit of a goofy mood, but here we are.
Yeah. Same here. I thought tonight's show was a pretty good show. They're starting to come up with a different flow with everything. You're starting to see different rivalries, feuds that they're trying to build up, things of the sort. And I like in the different type of promo segments, like the one tonight with Legado de Fantasma. I thought the reaction that they got from the crowd made it even better because you knew last time in that triple threat match with the tag team that they were getting a lot of the pops. And so having them challenge MSK and the fans get behind them, I don't know how they're going to handle that, even though you have MSK getting boos most of the time when they're on TV and you just heard that major pop for them. I want to know and how the crowd responded to when Kushida came on the screen and challenged and made the challenge for next week for the title. So that whole segment was nice to me, and I liked what he was saying. And he was talking about the definition of a man and what is not what he do for himself, it's what he do for his brothers and all of that. That all was nice to me. What do you guys think about that one segment?
That's a great question because, listen, there are 9 Fast and the Furious movies for a reason. You put a few cool guys together and you have them talk about family and togetherness and loyalty and sacrifice and all that, and people are going to be into it. So if you put together this faction, Legado del Fantasma, and you make them hold fast to all of the same philosophies as those in the Fast nonology, is that what you call a movie of 9 films? Obviously they're going to be cheered. I find it interesting that they continue to swim upstream with these guys, unless they're planning a double turn, which I would be super, super on board with, because you can't be this cool and get booed forever. The idea of a cool heel is just, it doesn't go against, it goes against everything that makes wrestling work. So yeah, obviously they're going to get cheered. You put them against somebody who's also cool, like Kushida, and hopefully that helps. But Kushida also has his own uphill battles to fight. So hard to say. They had Kushida appear via video. I don't know if that's because he's elsewhere. I don't know if that's because it's easier for him to speak to do a little bit more English in a controlled environment. Either way, I thought it was fine. And I think it was fine that we got to a match this way. Would have taken a little more time spent on it, but we got there. And Legato, again, as always, does some pretty good work. Escobar just dynamite on the mic. Wild is pretty good on the mic, and Mendoza's getting there. And just as a faction in the ring, super cool. So, yes, they're going to be cheered. It's just a matter of how long they swim upstream, Tom.
But Zach Wentz's dad died, Kelly. That's never happened to anybody else. You can't can't boo that man.
Oh, boy.
Well, I don't know what Fast and the Furious is, but whatever it is, it's a non-something. Okay. I guess I'm glad I had a couple of jokes because I really just thought this was kind of a state of the union of Legado del Fantasma, and then an announcement that the match is happening next week. Really wasn't all that much to it, but like I felt about a couple of other segments on the show, I'm glad that we can take a breath and just have some guys who are featured acts come out and cut a little promo. You mentioned it regarding a different segment earlier, but it's just that's a hint that we're not breakneck right now. It's Tuesday night NXT. I'm readjusting to the more favorable pace.
Yeah, I love that. Sometimes I get to, I can feel it because I do these recaps, and obviously on a match like Champion Thatcher versus GYV, my hands are feeling the stress, but it's nice to just be able to soak in promos, stuff, setting up a good TV show. Not even just setting up a takeover. We're literally working young, relatively unknown talents for the future. It's almost like this is NXT, Tom. So there you go. Nate, I didn't throw to you yet.
No, you didn't, but that's okay. I'm kind of like right there with you guys. I noticed this actually even before Keith brought it up earlier tonight, Reverend Keith brought it up, that this did feel like a much much better paced show. I even got like hints of like that old school NXT vibes, you know, from back in the hour long NXT era, because like you get a lot of different matches that are just a lot of different stories that are actually getting time. This is actually a perfect example of that. You know, the Legado del Fantasma coming out. I always want to call him Joaquin Phoenix for some reason. Joaquin Wilde and Mendoza, Raul Mendoza, they don't usually get a lot of mic time. So I was glad to see them get a bit of mic time tonight. I was glad to see, Escobar himself get some mic time. And then Kushida, I'm really looking forward to actually seeing that too. So, I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add here, I guess, really, compared to what you guys already said. But I guess really the biggest thing I just wanted to add was the pacing. I really did appreciate the pacing tonight. I'm kind of felt that way a little bit last week, too. It felt a little bit slowed down and just a little bit better paced. So I'm hoping that continuing on Tuesday nights that we continue in that way.
We thank you, everybody, for the calls. Let's start going to some of the other matches that were much shorter because we got three more matches, and they were just barely over 10 minutes together. But let's get to those and some other segments, and we will get to the emails at the end. Saray versus Zeta Ramir, this started right around at the hour. They gave this match a little bit of a hype segment beforehand, talking about the two newest women on the NXT roster, which is arbitrary because I'm sure they've signed people, whatever. The two newest people featured on TV, Saray and Zeta Ramir. This went 4:36. Of course, Saray wins, but a few false spots for Zeta. They shook hands beforehand. They also shook hands afterwards. And after we came back from commercial, Saray shaking the hand of Ramir, backstage, like at gorilla position, and Ramirez kind of sitting down, selling the loss and the effects of it, but Saray is still accepting the handshake. Tony Storm starts to come in, perhaps to attack Saray or Ramirez, but Zoe Stark cuts that off and says, no, thank you. So, yes, we got our Zoe Stark fix, even though it was a very small amount. And so we've got Saray, Ramirez, Zoe kind of having their babyface powwow as Tony thinks about the numbers and takes off. Simple stuff, but I like this, Nate.
I also like this as well. The match itself, I thought was great. Zeta Ramirez, I didn't really think she was going to have a chance in winning here, but last week I was really impressed with that win that she pulled out of nowhere against Toni Storm. I don't know when they allowed anybody to do a shooting star press again, but I thought she pulled off a great shooting star press, even if she did come up a little bit short on the landing. I thought it looked like phenomenal. So I'm kind of hoping we get to see some more out of those, or more of those out of her, because I love me a good shooting star press, even if they are a little bit dangerous. As long as you can pull them off safely, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. And Brock Lesnar doesn't remember the end of WrestleMania 19. So.
No, he does not. Thank God he's got a thick neck, right?
How many Zeta Ramirez does he weigh?
Oh, God.
All of them.
All of them. That's a good answer. But yeah, so like I said, the match tonight was great. Saray really impressed me as well. Her first match a couple weeks ago, I wasn't on the show for, so I didn't get to really talk about it. But she's so far like really impressed me. Those are the only two matches I've actually really seen her in. I've seen some highlights and stuff. Yeah, just kind of like things people posted on Reddit and whatever, but I haven't actually like really, really watched anything that she's done outside of these two matches. So I probably should, I probably will, especially if it's what I've seen, you know, if she puts out anything compared to what I saw here tonight. So thumbs up there. The backstage stuff, okay with it. It was nice to see Zoe Stark, come out and, do her thing, and kind of, get involved a little bit here. I don't want to say like locker room leader, but it's almost like she was the new girl. Now there's a couple new girls, so she's looking out for them, which I kind of, I did like it. I thought that was a cool little thing, little touch. Yeah, overall, I can't complain, and I'll give the segment a thumbs up while I clean the dog shit off the floor.
So if Toni Storm faces Zoe Stark in an Iron Man match, is it a Toni Stark match?
Dun, dun, dun.
Tom, save
us. I think you mean dun, dun, dun. Okay, anyway, before we get copyright stricken.
Okay.
I think they should form a tag team and call it the Iron Women. But, I like that the new girls are both becoming Zoe Stark's BFFs. I like that because they have promise, and yet there is such a well-defined tier of excellent NXT women right now that the new girls being a collective, I think it forms a strength for them rather than all being just on their own merits right now, even though they have their own merits as we're seeing. I'm digging what we have seen out of Ramirez so far. We've been granted very little thus far, but I do like what we're seeing. Saray so far is all right. Her offense is stiff in a way that makes you sit at attention. It's sometimes also very imprecise. And when she plays to the crowd, it reminds me of the passionless Toni Storm. So she very much seems like a work in progress. I don't know how much of that is just her or how much of that is transitioning to a WWE style. I don't know how long she has actually been over here after dealing with travel restrictions. I don't know how long she was working on this stuff prior to debuting on TV. But here's the thing. Here's the thing that I will remember most from this match is that they do Saray's big entrance for the second time we've ever seen it. She rises from the stage. They've got the dramatic music and the lights and the fog or whatever. And she walks to the ring like she's having a bad day and she's going to pick up a prescription refill at a pharmacy. Like, she looks like she just poured spoiled milk in her cereal and she's got to stop at the corner store to pick up more so she can have breakfast before she shows up late to work. I don't know. I feel like after everything, that's the kind of thing where as soon as she gets backstage, you gotta tap her on the shoulder and be like, hey, so you can't do that again. We want to give you chances, but let me show you what that looked like. Let me show you the replay right here. That, oh, no. You were at a 0.5 out of 10, and we need you at least a 7.5 right now. That might be like the most memorable image coming out of this whole episode of NXT was her just looking like she was doing a chore and not being all too happy about it.
And it's ironic that that's the thing coming out of that, because it's there's such a lack of presence with somebody that we were told had all the presence in the world. It's so weird that somebody could have such a lack of presence and leave such a small... If I didn't take notes on this show and I just shot from the hip and I took calls and I talked about this show until we were done, like until we had until we were time out, I don't know that we would remember Saray and Zayn Ramir. It was fine, but Saray's she's the project right now. And maybe Zeta Ramirez too, but Saray's the project right now. And I'm surprised also in how little presence there is. And right now I couldn't pick her out of a lineup of one, and that is not a great thing. When you've seen somebody, like after Zoe Stark's first match, I had her committed to memory. Io Shirai, same thing. Most of the women that have shown up, committed to memory the first time they showed up. With Saray, it seems like there's still work to be done there, and I don't know what the disconnect is that, as Nate said, maybe this was you, Tom, is strong style not matching up, is what she wants to do not matching up with WWE style, which we've seen before, and maybe that's happening now. I don't know, gang. Let's move on to the next one because that's a big question. Jake Atlas versus LA Knight. Good to see Jake Atlas on TV. It seems like they have occasionally been planning to move him up, but they've only moved him up to be knocked back in a championship match or a slightly important match with somebody to set up somebody else. LA Knight goes over in 303, kind of out of nowhere. They trade near impact moves, and out of nowhere, LA Knight hits his finisher in 303, which was the shortest match by a single second on this show. So LA Knight over Jake Atlas. We did get an email from Kevin Catani. Salutations, Jensen. May the 4th be with you. I thought tonight was a solid show, and I was very happy to see Jake Atlas in action, not to mention LA Knight's line about Jake needing an Atlas after the beating he was about to get. I liked what I saw from Saray, and I look forward to seeing her development. How soon before they gear her up for a title challenge? Lastly, I'm excited to see how Candice and Indy use the titles to further their story after we get past the obligatory rematch with Ember and Shotzi. Who is next? An established team or a hodgepodge? Thanks as always, and be aware of the Revenge of the Fifth tomorrow. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. The rematches are not obligatory anymore, so I don't know if they need to do that, and maybe they will, I think they should, just so they can put a match in a quote-unquote fair context and have the heels cheat to win, which is what they should have done in the first place. But otherwise, I don't know that they need to do a rematch. So at any rate, Knight over Atlas in 303, and on that email, Tom.
Yeah, I don't think they need to do a rematch with the women, although if they do, they could do something where Taya Valkyrie wants to be at ringside, distracting Shotzi or something. And I know the word distract, oh my gosh, it's a whole tangent there, but it's even gotten so bad that it's part of the reason why I'm back off of the main roster, because every single match ends that way. And it's just like, well, what's the point of even watching then? And this is me defending the storytelling on the main roster for so long. And you know, I'm sick of it, but I could see that being a circumstance. Of course, they had the segment earlier on with Casey and Casey, Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro, which I kind of laughed at, because I know it was, I guess if the women have a lower mid card, that's their lower mid card. But I was invested in their rivalry with Chan Sha, and they're just like, yeah, we're done with it. Like, so how's it going with your whole thing there with Mei Ying and Xia Li? Oh yeah, no, we're done. We're not doing that anymore. Like, okay. And I fully expected like somebody to come beat them up from behind or something, but it seems like they might be next up to get a match and to lose that match. Although I've been saying about both of them for a while as individuals and now as a team, it would be cool to see them get like an underdog story like that. Saray, you would imagine they would have her on the same, like they flagged to us with video packages that she would be on the same trajectory as women's champions, Asuka, Kairi, Io, all from Japan. And Rich Fan, you know, all of us are kind of like, oh, Saray's sight unseen. And we've gotten questions about that. Can't answer because we don't know her very well. Rich Fan on the Everything mailbag this past week, if you're a VIP, he had some insightful comments about her. Basically, I won't give away everything, but basically culminating in the fact that after Asuka, Kairi, and Io, who had already made names for themselves in Japan, they decided to look for somebody in Saray who was earmarked as like, okay, she is going to be the next it girl over there, but we're going to get her before she becomes that so she can become the it girl for us. She's still been doing this for 10 years, so there's that. But anyway, after these first two showings, what I'm getting at is that, you know, you imagine she's on that Asuka, Kairi, Io trajectory, and they might be like, we need to rethink things because this is going to be a longer road. Maybe we'll still get there, but it's going to be a longer road. Atlas versus LA Knight, Tuesday night NXT. This is exactly what I'm talking about. I criticized it 2 weeks ago when they put it in the main event slot because I wanted something with a little more weight behind it on a two-hour program where you're trying to keep viewers tuned in through the commercials. I felt like putting Kyle versus Cameron in the main event there was a little bit of a dud. But this is the kind of thing that they should be doing. This is NXT's DNA going back to the beginning of the Full Sail days. And so just having featured act LA Knight go out there against, you know, basically enhancement talent Jake Atlas, but as I've said over and over again, even though he has a higher ceiling, he really excels at being enhancement talent. That I welcome it on my screen. So thumbs up there.
All right. The one other match we haven't talked about is Asher Hale versus Cameron Grimes. Asher Hale had a name before his initials were AH, but they're not right in front of me, so I can't remember.
Anthony Henry.
What they are. Anthony Henry. Thank you. And yes, this went 304, a full second longer than Knight over Atlas. Grimes winning an enhancement match is Perfect. It's what you want to do right now. I think that Grimes does have a high ceiling, and they've used him in a great – we've talked a lot with – like I talked about it with Wade actually quite a bit with Wade Keller on one of the post shows about is Grimes being wasted? And I said, you know, Grimes is in a position where he could be employed for a very, very long time. Like if he's a failed main eventer, he might be gone quick. But as a successful mid-card comedy act, he could be around for a very long time. And it seems like right now they want to figure out what they've got in Cameron Grimes. So he goes over Asher Hale in 304. Hale is a younger-ish, raw, super, super incredible tools with this guy. This is it for what I've seen of him. So I can't give you anything more than that. But in what little searching I did while he was wrestling or after his match, people seemed to like this guy's work. So cool to see him. And yes, he was game. He was a game opponent and he ate the cave in for the Cameron Grimes win. Cameron Grimes, just a couple of segments later, showed up with Ever Rise backstage. Ever Rise, still promoting their YouTube show. Grimes says, "I'd like to hang with you guys, but there's only room for three, me, myself, and I." And he said he was going to the VIP room. And then later on, much later on in the show, he went to, this is the one guy they use in multiple segments a week because he can, he's that awesome. He shows up at at some kind of club outside and the bouncer, probably a wrestler. I don't know who this guy is. Maybe Tom knows, but maybe not. Bouncer says, "You're not on the list." But one guy is on the list. So obviously a limo comes up and it is Ted DiBiase. Ted DiBiase gets out and says, "Why rent out a room when you could buy the whole place?" And he does his trademark laugh and he walks in. I don't know where this is heading, but now we've seen DiBiase twice. I don't care where it's going because I've already had a lot of fun with it and I can't complain about anything that's happening. And Cameron Grimes and Ted DiBiase are both major favorites of mine. So I don't know. If it goes somewhere, that's just gravy, Tom.
Ted DiBiase looks better than the last time I saw him. I don't know if it's just the haircut, but I think he's lost some weight too. I tugged your ear a bit last week off air about just how awful the segments were last week. And I was like, you've got Full Sail right there. There's an established relationship and film students and auditioning actors coming in twice a month, at least if it's still the way it was when I was doing it. And they still end up with these awfully produced segments. I am so sorry, Jeremy Borash. I can tell it's your work and it's not your best, but this one was a bit more palatable. I was trying to scramble to find the guy's name because I can never remember it. I couldn't get there in time, but there's one signee that kind of looks like the dude who was playing the bouncer, but he would have had to like have a liver condition or something to end up looking like this after what he looked like the last time I saw him. So there's a resemblance, but probably not the same guy. Basically the same thoughts as LA Knight versus Jake Atlas. Welcome on my screen. You know, we were just talking about, Paige versus Bayley as Bayley's debut match in NXT. And it's, you know, nobody knew who she was. She was the designated jobber, putting over the featured act Paige. And it's, you know, this could be like a similar little Easter egg for Asher Hale, but even if not, whatever, good to see Grimes on TV getting a win since they have time for him to do that now, even though he's not embroiled in a feud with an active wrestler. That is, I was wondering if they were intentionally, having him rush his entrance so the music couldn't get to the sing-along part, since he's still supposed to be a heel, going against how everybody actually feels about him. But then not only does he say, you know, which, you know, if he does it enough times, the crowd will start to get that it's a participatory thing. He says to the moon before he does the cave in. But then his victory music picks up right at the sing-along part. They'll figure out eventually that people like Cameron Grimes, or maybe they'll tweak him enough that he becomes dastardly again. But right now he's a very likable guy that we are not supposed to like.
So what Tom and I were talking about was that scene that Grimes did in the diamond jewelry shop. And the guy who was working the counter in the jewelry store was just drop dead awful, just so bad in the scene. And then I was talking to, I've done several commercials, and it's not hard in any city of any size. You probably don't have to look very hard to find somebody with some acting chops, with some background in it. So to just say, hey, you're in my line of sight. Do you want to be on a show that is broadcast nationally? Yeah, it's not really the way to go. The guy sucked, and you can do better. You can do much better. Maybe if you need somebody to be an actor, ask an actor. Nate?
Yeah, I would agree. Ask an actor. That was last week's segment. I talked about that last week. This week with Cameron Grimes, I definitely dug this match. It certainly, I think it's exactly really what we kind of needed to see for Cameron Grimes right now. It's, you know, with that squash. This guy, what was his name? Anthony Henry was his old name. What are they calling him? Something Hale?
Asher Hale.
So yeah, I don't know a thing about him either. But I actually, like, I really was kind of impressed with him tonight. I like his look. I like the way he moved in the ring. He was super smooth. So, yeah, I mean, I know obviously the match is really more about Cameron Grimes here tonight, but that was kind of my takeaway from that match. Cause I really did. I dug what he brought to the table here. So I'm kind of hoping we see a little bit more out of him, or a little bit more from him, you know, even if it's just in an enhancement role. Cause, I enjoyed him. I thought he did a great job tonight. But yeah, Cameron Grimes, man, I'm eating it up. I can't get enough. Going to be honest with you, you know, from the skits last week, from this, you know, the skits this week with Ted DiBiase, you know, it's some of the best stuff they're putting out on NXT as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, thumbs up for me all around.
All right, let's go to some backstage stuff. There's a lot of it. We had Gargano and Theory talking with Regal, and Regal's talking to Scarlett, and Theory made some jokes. Those are the biggest I've ever seen. And he was talking about Scarlett's fingernails, because get it, folks, boobs. And also we had Mackenzie talking to Casey and Caden, the way talking to Regal, and Cross putting Cross and Theory being put together in a match. Imperium had a segment that was largely in German, and they agreed on something, and I don't know what they agreed on. The Way were in a dressing room, and it was suggested that maybe Dexter Lumis was hiding in one of the lockers. There was a Car Shield commercial. I don't normally talk about Car Shield commercials or any commercials, but 2 minutes after LA Knight squashed Jake Atlas, we had LA Knight going down hard to a single chop from 12-year-old Ric Flair on a Car Shield commercial. Then we had a wonderful segment to promote the Raquel Gonzalez Mercedes Martinez match. I can't believe we haven't talked about this, but this is the kind of thing I love to set up. Not quite ready for TakeOver championship matches. By the way, Martinez owned Gonzalez in this segment. Gonzalez hit her lines well, but Martinez just owned the room, sucked the air out of the room, and good stuff. I would love her to win. She's not going to, but she is, I am entranced by every second that I get of Mercedes Martinez and everything she brings to the table. And wonderful idea here to even do this segment, to have these two talking to Beth. Well-produced, well-delivered. Gonzalez is getting there. Martinez is there. Good stuff. Tom?
Touched on some of it. The stuff I didn't touch on, Imperium, it basically just seems like Walter is upset with Alexander Wolf, so the story continues. The one we've been skipping is these promos for the Diamond Mine, which people on social media are buzzing about it being Tessa Blanchard, which last week when I didn't watch the show live, I was like, oh, I guess that sounds believable. And then I watched the segment, and I was like, yeah, diamonds, but how in the world are you getting Tessa out of that? It's clearly MMA-based. And speaking of, as they've come up multiple times tonight, speaking of guys who have lingered in the PC forever and not been used in any way except for, you know, T-shirt fillers in Thatch's Thatch Can, I don't associate any of them with MMA. So I worry that this is a bunch of the recently signed meatheads that are being thrown out there before they're ready. But as ever, we shall see. And as for Gonzalez and Martinez, I agree with you that Raquel hit her lines well and Mercedes owned her, especially because while Mercedes was talking, Raquel was, it just doesn't seem like emoting directly into a camera lens is a strong suit, or however you want to phrase that, because she just kept on going like, yeah, yeah, oh, really? Uh-huh. And it just, it didn't really translate well, and I feel like she's done that exact same thing better in the ring and like direct face-to-face confrontational promos. Not that this needed to be that. She just didn't handle that part of it very well. And overall, I thought this was a fine way to frame what both wrestlers have to prove to one another going into this match. But I got to nitpick it just a little bit further, because you've got it's just the scripting thing where Beth is supposed to be hosting this interview. And of course she only asks one question, and yes, the women get into it and maybe time has run out, but Beth never speaks again. And they always do this kind of thing on any WWE brand. But Raquel, with her first bit, she goes, at the end of it, after Mercedes has interrupted, she goes, don't cut me off. But then that was the end of her scripted line, so Mercedes goes ahead with her stuff anyway. And then, when they're both done, they just sit there obediently, because neither of them have any more scripted retorts, and they're just still on screen for another second and a half, while Beth isn't saying anything, and both of them are just sitting there, like, waiting for the director to call cut. So definitely could have been shorn up around the edges, but overall, I'm happy that they lent a little bit of extra narrative going into the actual match.
There's such a thing as a second take, folks. Nate?
Take two. So yeah, I'll start with that. I don't have a whole heck of a lot really to add on, I guess really most of what you guys have already been talking about, really. But with Martinez and Gonzalez, I completely agree. I mean, Martinez kind of blew Gonzalez out of the water there. I feel like that's the way it probably should be, considering their, you know, how tenured Mercedes Martinez is compared to how, you know, new to the business Gonzalez is. I guess that's what I would expect. What I meant to say. Overall, I'm looking forward to that match. I had some of the same nitpicks that Tom did too, especially that lingering at the very end there. Beth only actually speaking that once. Let's see, what else? There were a couple other segments that you threw to us on, and I don't remember what else they were.
Oh, who cares? They were nothing. Let's see. we had Theory going off about Scarlett's two great big fingernails.
Fingernails, nothing really.
Grimes and Ever-Rise. Frankie Monet showed up a couple of times. The Way.
I got nothing.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to some emails, folks. There are two left, so let's read them and get to you guys. Hey, team, it's JB from Detroit. Several questions for tonight. Number one, with Daniel Bryan being, quote unquote, banned from SmackDown after losing to Roman Reigns, what are the chances that he ends up in NXT in a Finn Balor-like role, living out some of his dream match bucket list items before he officially retires? Number two, what do WWE/NXT think it's a good idea to have Vic Joseph call Kyle O'Reilly Cool Kyle and think, okay, we talked about that. Number three, does the main event scene of NXT feel like it's stuck on a treadmill to you guys with Balor, O'Reilly, Dunn, and Cross? Number four, who is more likely to get called up first, Cross or Theory? Number five, there are credible sites reporting that WWE is in talks with MLW to strike up an evolve-like partnership. How do you guys envision this partnership to look if it actually comes together, and what are the pros and cons for both companies? Love the show and go VIP. If they come together, that's great for MLW. For WWE, fine. It's one more tiny reason to go to Peacock. Most of the people that I really liked in MLW are not there anymore. Swerve and Lawler, they're gone. So I don't know. More likely to get up first, Cross or Theory. I guess I would say Theory because he doesn't have a championship, even though I think they'll both be up before long. Stuck on a treadmill main event scene. No, I think this is fine. I don't think O'Reilly or Cross have been there long enough to be like a treadmill, and I don't think Dunn is successful enough to be on a treadmill. I think it's just fine. If not super exciting. And with Bryan being banned from SmackDown, it means nothing. I think it more likely has something to do with the main roster than with NXT. Lots to unpack here. So I guess I'll throw to you, Tom.
Daniel Bryan. I am hesitant to say, oh, yeah, he's totally coming to NXT, although this does seem like the kind of thing that Bryan would probably fight to do. We know he's been, I don't know how significant his role on creative is, but we know that he's been doing that backstage stuff, so I don't know if being with NXT would conflict with that. But it seems realistic that he would. Whether or not I would care for it, I guess we would have to see. Bryan's never been an act that I've been super, super into. I wasn't even into, WrestleMania 30. I was that jackass that was sitting there rooting for Triple H to beat him in the opening match so he didn't make it to the main event. Yep, that was me. And this is also the guy who, like, yes, he's allowed to feel this way, but maybe you shouldn't say it out loud. He just main evented WrestleMania for a second time. Very few people get to do that. And what does he say in his first interview afterwards? He's like, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't really feeling it. Yeah, I don't know. Didn't feel like I was really there. It was weird. I'm like, dude, just give me more reasons to not care for you, Daniel. Main event scene. If it was just O'Reilly and Cross, I would feel like it was, and even Cole factoring in there, I would feel like it was pretty fresh. With Dunn and Balor still hanging around, I can even make the argument for Dunn because he cut that promo saying something like, I'll be NXT champion, and my reaction to it was, well, I guess there is a new champion now, so you can cycle him back into the title picture, and that's fine. But yeah, I guess I wanted to say yes, but Kelly, maybe you're right, that it's not a treadmill. It's just sort of not exciting right now. Who's more likely to get called up first? Well, it's Austin Theory because he was already called up. Yuck. No, it'll be Cross. This what we're seeing right now is not Austin Theory's final form. Very far from it. But how quickly does he advance from it? And I don't know. I kind of feel like he's got a longer stay on NXT now, just for the fact that call-ups aren't what they used to be. They basically don't exist anymore. They're not entirely gone, but they are not at all what they used to be. So we can't think of someone like Austin Theory being on the track to definitely be on the main roster. Maybe he's an NXT lifer. I don't know. But that's spewing out a whole bunch. I think, you know, he definitely has a ceiling that could lead him to success on the main roster for sure. The MLW thing, this is the sort of thing that when we get emailed about it, I'm like, okay, major credible sites are reporting. All right, how much do I really want to believe this? And this sounds like the kind of thing that I wouldn't, that I'm hesitant to believe it just reading it in an email, but we'll see. Theoretically, what would be the pros and cons? Kelly, you mentioned one of them, and Tom Lawler is still on their roster list. I don't know if he's active for them, but Lawler, Jacob Fatu, the Dirty Blondes, Flying Brian Jr., Perot, which I'm still pronouncing Perot after Barrington Hughes told me personally that that is actually how you pronounce it, and I still don't know if he was ribbing me.
I think Tom Lawler is probably signed with New Japan, given what's been happening there lately. He won a tournament, so he probably is signed. If they'll put guys in tournaments if they're not signed, but he won the tournament.
And then you've got Aria Blake and Selena De La Renta, who I saw in the earlier forms of MLW Fusion when I was still covering the tapings that were going on here in Orlando. And I've seen them a couple times at local indie events, and they bring a lot to what they're doing in managerial roles. Pretty sure I saw Aria wrestle a couple times. Well, anyway, I saw, speaking of boobs, I saw Aria Blake throw a pair of novelty boobs as a weapon in a ring. She helped her boyfriend Hunter Law win a match did she accidentally make him lose? I don't remember. I'd have to go back and check my report. But there is a report on PW Torch where Aria Blake throws a pair of novelty boobs into the ring.
Well, certainly when boobs are involved in a finish, you forget everything else.
Yes. Got some pictures of them flopping around. They're here on my phone somewhere. So those are the advantages, that they've got some talent, even though, like Kelly said, a lot of the talent has moved on. One of the neutral aspects is that there's the awkwardness of a lot of people who have already been in NXT, like ACH, TJP, not NXT per se, but to a certain extent, Leo Rush. Like, these people are in MLW now. And I think two of the other major negatives are that MLW, even though they used to feature Santana Garrett as their women's star, and every taping they would have her beat a different person, whether it was Leva Bate filling in for Chelsea Green, no-showing yet another event, or whether it was Mia Yim. Mia Yim was the whole reason I went to MLW in the first place, and then ended up discovering the reason why I kept going in Shane Strickland. I heard that Mia Yim was wrestling Santana Garrett, and I was like, oh, well, I am going to go see that. And then they tried to build something with Sue Young and Zeta, who was coming off of her NXT contract, and must have had some sort of workaround in her no-compete clause, or maybe the no-compete clause wasn't what it usually is, because she filmed the taping before that would have been up, but then it aired, I think, after, well, whatever. The fact is, they don't have a women's division. So that, I believe, is a big issue. The other issue is that MLW has a lot of potential on its own. It would have more potential if AEW hadn't become a thing. But MLW, they do, I mean, I haven't watched them in a while because a lot of the people that I liked stopped appearing as regularly and moved on entirely. So I fell off it pretty quickly after they stopped taping here in Orlando. But when I was watching, they had a lot going for them. And if you listen to people who are still keeping up with them, they say the same things. So then associating with WWE as WWE's new farm league, it pretty much puts the ceiling right there. Like, okay, that's what they are. They're WWE's farm league. They're the new Evolve, which also then in turn makes me wonder, like, all right, is this NXT Evolve thing, like, not going to become a thing? I haven't, you know, it's entirely theoretical, but the rumors about, like, oh, yeah, they filmed a, They taped the pilot episode. Josiah Williams hosted it, and those guys who are lingering in the PC that keep coming up on this podcast, they wrestled matches on it. I'm like, okay, that sounds kind of intriguing. That sounds like the reason I started watching NXT in the first place was to see these up-and-comers. So is that going to be the new, what we used to think of as being NXT, whereas what is NXT is basically a new show now? And maybe I'll pay more attention to that. Maybe I'll start covering it. But maybe if the MLW thing comes to fruition, maybe that just takes the place of whatever NXT Evolve was going to be.
Oh, Chelsea Green. She sure does exist, folks. Nate.
But does she? all right. So I guess to tackle these with Daniel Bryan being banned from SmackDown, I talked about this with Greg Parks on Wrestling Night America on Sunday. So here, you know, kind of my thought is he's probably going to be showing up on Raw. You know, the other thing is, you know, he, and he's even said this, and granted, you know, this could be him just, you know, pulling kayfabe, but you know, everybody keeps saying my contract's up in September. I don't know why people keep saying September. So I'm not, who knows? I don't know if his contract's actually up in September or if it's not. But if it is, then I would imagine he's probably going to be, you know, on Raw, not necessarily on NXT. I'd love to see him on NXT personally. To see him in matches against like Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, even Karrion Kross or, you know, Escobar. Swerve. There are some great matches I think that Daniel Bryan could have there. And I also agree with what Tom said. I think this going to NXT is exactly something that he would love to do. Yes, Corbin, I know I'm not paying attention to you right now.
Multipass.
Yeah. Yes. Typically
wrestling fans don't pay attention to Corbin. It's what we do.
Right. Right.
Boom. Got him.
Ha. Hey, you know what? I didn't name him. He came with the name and I just kept it.
I wasn't going to ask, but I was disgusted, so I'm glad that this
originally, as soon as I heard the name Corbin, I thought of Corbin Dallas from Fifth Element, not Baron Corbin. So, anyway.
I thought of Corbin Burns, the pitcher in Major League Baseball. So there you go. I guess we're okay.
That works.
If you put your spin on it, you can name him Corbin Salad.
There we go. Corbin Salad. I like that. God, what was I saying? Corbin, you got me all screwed up here. Good dog. Anyway, so I don't think we'll see him, see Daniel Bryan show up in NXT, although I'd love to. I think it's probably going to be on Raw, potentially in some other capacity, but, probably not in NXT. I'd love to see it, but probably not. Yeah, we already talked about Kyle O'Reilly being called Cool Kyle. The main event scene of NXT feels like it's stuck on a treadmill, a little bit. I think we're about to see that treadmill finally kind of start to, maybe become a walkway again, for use of a really crappy metaphor. It seems like we're kind of there. I don't know what's going to happen necessarily with this, you know, fatal four-way situation we've got going on, five if you consider Adam Cole. But I think we're about to finally kind of get out of this pattern of feeling kind of stuck. Who's going to get called up first? Cross or Theory? Definitely going to be Cross. Credible sites reporting about MLW. I've also heard the same thing. But quite a few times actually today, kind of just different dirt sheets and whatnot, kicking around. But I don't know if it's actually going to be a thing. I feel like Tom and Kelly pretty much touched on that, very well, probably better than I could anyway. So I'll leave that pretty much at that, but I have heard the same MLW rumblings there. And I was kind of wondering what that was going to leave for NXT Evolve too. So that's my question. If that's still going to be a thing, I would like to see another NXT type show up that is more akin to what we originally fell in love with, and less so of this new iteration of NXT. But you know, obviously we'll see what happens. But if it does come to fruition, the partnership with MLW, I feel like it's a good thing. It's certainly a good thing for MLW. It's a good thing for wrestling in general. you know, I'm taking, like, another thing we talked about on Wrestling Night America is, you know, AEW, Impact, New Japan, you know, all of these, you got those three companies that are AAA too. So you got four companies that are starting to work together, you know, to promote matches and promote their talent. And, you know, I mean, Kenny Omega, he's a dual champion right now in both Impact and AEW. That's getting more eyes on wrestling. It's getting more eyes on AEW. It's getting more eyes on Impact. It's getting more eyes on AAA for them down in Mexico, you know, New Japan. It's a good thing for wrestling overall. And where, you know, Impact, for example, you kind of talked a little bit about them almost feeling like they're the ones kind of getting used almost like I think Kevin Catani actually said it, that it was almost like an artist kind of getting, you know, exposure is the way that Impact is being treated with AEW right now. And in a way, kind of, sort of, but that exposure, at least in this case, I feel like is certainly a good thing for Impact, especially with the trajectory they've been on over the years. They're starting to get some of the best ratings that they've possibly gotten. So I think any collaboration between two companies right now, or multiple companies, doesn't just have to be two, any collaboration is just good for wrestling in general.
All right, folks. Well, that's who we are. Are you the kind of Baron Corbin who kind of smells up the main event scene? Are you Corbin Burns who throws 40 strikeouts for every walk? Are you the kind of Corbin Burnson who tanks plays in movies about baseball? Are you the kind of Corbin the dog who shits in Shotzi Blackheart's tank? You are a Corbin, whoever you are, and that's important that I know what kind of Corbin you are. I'm Kelly Wells. And I don't know what the hell I'm talking about because it's getting late. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com or call us 515-605-9345, whether you are named Corbin or not. Tom, who are you?
At Tom Staup on Twitter, and I will segue right over to Cool Guy Nate by letting him know that I have spent the day poring over homebrew D&D classes and subclasses and potential multi-classes because my four-year-long campaign with the same people is slowly creeping to an end in a really exciting way. I'm like more into it now than ever. I can talk to you about that off air if you're interested. But oh man, I'm already getting myself fired up for whatever my next character is going to be.
Nathan Corbin, awesome. Who are you?
I am Nate Lindberg, and at Nate Lindberg on Twitter, I do the hits and misses for NXT and the All Perspective SmackDown Report, as well as this show. I have Corbin the dog, and I'll probably post more pictures of him on Twitter because, hey, who doesn't like to look at a cute puppy? There was something else I was going to say here, and it was going to be funny, and it didn't work. So I'm just going to look like a moron, and we'll go back to you, Kelly.
All right, until next week. Rawr, har, har, har.
The hell?
My goodness.
We're off.
And the show went off the rails, folks. Oh, well. See you next week.
Oh, I don't know what's wrong with me. Oh, I haven't answered it. If anybody's a...
Yeah. Oh, no, people are still listening. People are still listening.
Still
you guys are still here.
Oh, love you
the
guys.
Lake Titicaca of podcasts. Why is it filled with boobs and poop?
I could hit end the episode anytime, but this is an Easter egg for those who listen to the end.
Yes.
Thank you.
Lorel,
I see you're there. 615. That was not Reverend Keith. That was
Sean.
That was Sean. Still listening.
Appreciate it, guys.
Easter eggs. We appreciate it. Oh God. If they knew how clever I was. I don't think they'd care. All right. Love you guys.